everyone. Welcome to the audio choke here at MMATorch.com, because that's the website you clicked on.
Ha-ha!
Like every week.
I'm Greg Rowan.
I'm Tobin Shelby.
And I'm Matt Collins. Suckers!
Why are they suckers?
Because they're double suckers.
All right.
They're suckers because they're suckers.
You present a fair and reasonable argument.
Thank you very much. That's what I bring to the table here at the audio choke.
Was that it?
Yeah. Let's talk about bites now.
Hey, so we got a lot to talk about on the podcast because there's UFC 121 coming up this weekend.
We'll get to that later.
Recap for UFC 120, and then I'm going to complain about Twitter and ESPN.
All right, we're going to get to that. So first off, let's talk about me. So first off, for breakfast, I had a wonderful bowl of... All right, anyways.
Of what?
Shenanigans.
You're not going to leave me hanging.
I didn't have breakfast this
morning.
So Matt,
tell us about your thoughts on UFC 120 that you watched.
I did not watch it.
You didn't watch it? We recorded it.
I know. I recorded it upstairs, too.
We recorded it on two TVs, and you didn't watch either of them?
No, I didn't.
Well, you at least watched one fight, didn't you?
I didn't see the whole thing.
Do you remember which fight it was?
I think it was the first fight, maybe the second. It was early on in the show. I watched it. I know what's up.
Yeah, so I just wanted to do some stalling and get some airtime on this episode. Before, like many others, I just sit quietly.
Into obscurity. You know, what would help to get some voice time on the show is to watch the MMA event we're talking about, and then you could...
That never occurred to me, Tobin. That never occurred to me. For a second there, I thought I was on a 30 Rock podcast where we talk about episodes of 30 Rock that we've seen.
Did you see their live show last week?
I did not because I don't watch things live.
Well, we didn't watch the Ultimate or the UFC live either.
Which we will get into here in just a little while, yes. And if Netflix streamed UFC, I would probably have a better chance of watching it.
Is Cloverfield streaming on Netflix?
Could it be? But I just like having the Blu-ray disc lying around in my room.
So let's talk about British fighters and the one who won.
One of them won.
Yeah, Michael Bisping. Because if nothing else, MMA is all about jingoism, right?
What?
Now I have to look up jingoism to make sure I use it properly.
Jingo what? Jingo who?
National stuff.
Oh, let's just call it xenophobia.
Right.
Fear of the outside world.
I totally used jingoism right. Extreme patriotism in the form of aggressive foreign policy. Okay, so maybe not the foreign policy bit. But,
hey, you know what? I can dig the foreign policy part because we knocked out the British guy. So, go USA.
F yeah, America. Right. No, but like, yeah, in general, like the reason you cheer or boo someone is, you know, it might be the what flag they walk out under, you know?
Yeah, well, flags are important.
Right. I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't really care for sports. I just want to see a good match.
Okay. Well, I mean,
yeah, suck it, Britain.
Yeah.
This is better than the Revolutionary War.
Yeah.
UFC 120.
That's what they get, trying to tax us.
But part of the experience is, like, you know, being the mob mentality. And so it's fun to, like, look to your left, look to your right, and see your fellow countrymen and root for the same thing. It doesn't happen all that often.
Yeah, unless you're Robert Downey Jr., in which case you can fly into enemy territory and still root for your team.
And look like a douchebag doing it.
Yeah, if you guys don't know what we're talking about, just Google Robert Downey Jr. and UFC 120, and that should probably take care of it, right?
Yeah. Just some great shots of him cheering at Dan Hardy falling asleep when he's surrounded by probably 20,000 Brits who are crying at that point.
Robert Downey Jr. was very excited for Carlos Condit. So let's talk about that main event, though. Michael Bisping beating Yoshihiro Akiyama.
Yeah.
Unanimous decision. Pretty emphatic.
Especially late in the fight. I mean, early on it was Akiyama landed a couple big shots that... I think they may have oversold how hurt Bisping was. He didn't look to me like he was about to go out.
I think he almost died.
Yeah, whatever. He looked okay. I mean, he got hit. He got hit pretty good, but he wasn't like, it's all about to end kind of hit.
Right. It was also a Carlos Condit left hook hit.
No, or even a Dan Henderson right hook hit.
Yeah.
It was nothing like that. He was just hit with a couple good shots. Yeah. Did he win all three rounds? You know, the first round was pretty close. The second round was fairly close. The third round, he whooped Akiyama's ass. There's no reason why Akiyama would have won the fight, but I think it was a little closer early on. But yeah, I mean, Bisping certainly pulled ahead in the end of the fight as Akiyama ran out of gas.
Yeah, something that he's going to have to... I mean, we saw that in the Chris Lieben fight as well.
Yeah.
The gas tank. And even the Alan Belcher fight that he won, he seems to, you know, have issues with the cardio.
And it's interesting because he went to Greg Jackson's, I thought, specifically because of his cardio issues in his last fight. And I would think that, you know, Greg Jackson would be the kind of guy who would be able to fix that. But
yeah, maybe eventually. It's definitely a work in progress, I would imagine.
Yeah, well, I mean, he didn't look much better than he did late in his last fight. And, you know, it's been a few months. So I would have thought that he would have improved that somewhat. But apparently not. Gassed out. Didn't get knocked out. Didn't get put away. But, you know, he's tough. And Michael Bisping doesn't tend to finish higher-level opponents. Like, you know, when he was fighting a lot of scrubs early on, he was putting them away usually, but he hasn't really done a whole lot of that in recent memory. So, I mean, I wasn't really expecting him to finish the fight necessarily, but certainly dominated towards the end of the fight. What do you think about that, Tobin?
I will say this, Akiyama sure can take a kick to the crotch.
Yeah, but maybe only one of them, because we're not sure. The ref, he claimed he got kicked in the nuts the first time, and we never really got to see the replay of it, but the ref was like, hey, you're okay. You didn't get kicked in the balls at all.
Walk it off.
So that makes me wonder if he did or did not, because usually Joe Rogan's all over that, but yeah, he didn't really have much to say about that one.
Yeah, no, but overall, I mean, I thought it was a good fight. I mean, Akiyama clearly, you know, even though he's got a losing record in the UFC, I think he's a solid guy to have around, a good test for people they want to give that shot to, or that, for people to take that next step up in the middleweight division. And he certainly comes to bang, for sure. And yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed the fight, and again, a solid win for Bisping. And I think he was coming off the loss to Wanderlei Silva.
No, he beat Dan Miller since then.
Oh, that's right. So you know, Bisping maybe putting his name back, building back towards that potential title shot.
Yeah, they've been kind of talking about that. I still think he's a little ways away.
Yeah.
But it really depends on how the division shakes out in the near future. I mean, if Anderson Silva still holds the belt after his next title defense, and Bisping gets an impressive win between now and then, maybe just because of the fact that he hasn't fought him yet, that would be a possibility, especially if Morkhart is to win the Okami fight and becomes the number one contender again. Dana White may pull the same move he did on John Fitch a little bit ago, be like, oh yeah, that was a number one contender fight, but I'm going to give this guy the fight anyway.
Just kidding.
Yeah.
I didn't say when you'd get your title shot. And then he turns into Vince McMahon and goes crazy.
I hate Stone Cold!
You'll get your title shot in 2012. Or whenever, yeah. No, but, I mean, again, I think Bisping, you know, he didn't put away Akiyama, which, again, like, I got to stop reading MMA message boards and stuff like that, because, like, even when you win, you can't win in the eyes of some fans, you know? They're like, oh, yeah, Bisping won, but he couldn't knock him out. What a loser. I'm like, yeah, but he still kind of kicked Akiyama's ass.
Yeah, so. he did whoop his ass. I'll give him that.
And Bisping, not everyone has knockout power, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, you know? And,
well, Bisping does have knockout power. I mean, he's knocked out plenty of guys.
Yeah. Maybe Akiyama just can take a punch.
I really think that's the case, because, I mean, I've seen Bisping fight more defensively in some of his fights.
Yeah.
Like when he fought Chris Lieben, for example, he even admitted to the fight, like, I was not looking to put Chris Lieben away.
Yeah, he was looking for a... Yeah.
So, like, sometimes I fault him, but in this case, even though it may have sounded like I was kind of faulting him earlier, you know, he definitely showed that Akiyama's got a pretty good chin, because Bisping was coming forward with the attack. He was pouring it on late in the fight, so he was at least trying. But, you know, that doesn't always work out either. A lot of people are often like, oh, decisions, I hate decisions, they're so boring. And many times that is the case. But decision does not necessarily mean it's boring. A lot of the best fights decisions just because the two guys are evenly matched to a point, or you know, maybe their chins are just stronger than their punches.
Mm-hmm.
There's all kinds of reasons why a fight doesn't necessarily finish. It's not always just the, you know, wrestler laying on top of a guy. And
right.
Sometimes in these cases, waiting for the decision in a really close fight can actually add to the drama of the fight.
Yeah.
Like the Forrest Griffin-Stephen Bonner fight, where it's just like, man, these two dudes have been just slugging it out for 15 minutes. It's like, I don't know who won.
Right.
That wasn't necessarily the case here because we were pretty sure that Bisping was going to win.
Right, but even then, it still wasn't boring, you know, because he was, you mentioned him, you know, pouring it on, putting it on Akiyama. And yeah, I mean, he was throwing just a high volume amount of strikes.
Yeah.
And, you know, even though it was a dominant fight, you know, it wasn't boring. So, I mean, yeah, no, I came away really impressed with Bisping. Again, I don't know if it shows any huge new strategy that he's picked up, but it just kind of shows that, you know, he's kind of still tweaking and perfecting what he already can do, I guess. You know,
I think Bisping is always going to be the same fighter.
Yeah.
He's just going to be better at what he does.
Right, but we're not going to see him like pick up a sick jiu-jitsu game anytime soon. Or
yeah, I mean, his whole thing on the ground has always been to get back up.
Yeah.
That's just the kind of fighter he is. You don't really see stand-up fighters like, I'm looking to take this guy down and submit him for the fans a whole lot. Usually it goes the other way around, where the grappler is like trying to be more exciting, so he learns the stand-up game. But
and
I mean,
he gets punched out by Nate Marquardt in like 20 seconds.
Yeah, or, you know, I mean, there's a lot of examples of that. but I mean, with Bisping, he's already got the fan-friendly sprawling brawl style.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't expect him to ever, you know, get a whole lot of submissions under his belt down the line, even if he may improve his game. But then again, you know, look at George St. Pierre. He is a striker-turned-wrestler over the course of his career.
Yeah. Yeah, so we never know. But, yeah, I mean, again, I think Michael Bisping's good. I don't know if he'll ever be, you know, great. If he'll ever, I think one day we will see Michael Bisping fight for a title. I don't know if we'll see him win one.
But
I think,
yeah.
I think part of that has to do with the UFC's kind of penchant to be like, oh, we need popular British fighters.
Yeah. Until Bisping is surpassed by another UFC Brit, he's always going to be like super hyped up by every, you know, the UFC. I mean, he's been probably the most hyped Ultimate Fighter ever. I have heard his name more than I've heard of guys like Forrest Griffin and Rashad Evans, who have won titles.
Yeah.
Just by virtue of him being the British guy. You know, he's the guy who headlines all kinds of cards in England. And I understand that he's extremely popular, and the UFC would love to get a title around his waist. But he's still got to win the fights.
Yeah.
And while he's good, on the cusp of being great, I don't think he's ever going to quite be the best. So I could see him getting a title shot if he just racks up enough wins. But, I mean, could you imagine a fight between Anderson Silva and Michael Bisping? Like, there's not a lot of fights where I say, like, this guy has no chance. But I don't see any way that Bisping would win that fight. And, I mean, Anderson Silva is not going to hold the title forever. But anyone who beats him, I would also expect to beat Bisping.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of British MMA, let's see.
We had a few of them on this
card.
Yeah,
torchbearers, I guess. I was going to be people, the UFC kind of looking to, you know, kind of carry the, you know, the UFC brand in Britain and, you know, bring in the crowds and the money. Dan Hardy getting KO'd end of,
KTFO'd,
yeah,
as a matter of fact.
And about 30 seconds into the, or left in the first round by Carlos Condit, who, man, for a split second, I was hoping we were going to see a double knockout.
Ooh, those are fun.
All the way across the sky.
Oh, goodness. But, yeah, Carlos Condit, you know, held his own, obviously standing up, you know, early on in that round with Dan Hardy and showed, you know, he wasn't afraid to stand up with Dan Hardy.
Absolutely not.
And, you know, at the end, just threw a wicked, wicked left hook. And, man, watching the replay, that was so awesome because they basically both threw the same combo.
Yeah.
At the same, and like Carlos Condit just landed his a split second faster, and he had a little more like he threw his body into that punch.
Yeah, well, they both were throwing some power in it. It actually looked like they were due to land at the same time, but Hardy's was off.
Yeah,
by a couple inches. Like he caught an air ball, while Condit caught it right where it belonged.
Yeah, and man, that was a like I like Dan Hardy, but that was a wicked knockout.
Yeah, that's a great highlight reel.
Yeah,
for him.
That's gonna do. I mean, Carlos Condit was putting together a string of some solid wins, and that's gonna help him out. I think he's already kind of like, hey, I'd like to fight. You know, see who comes out of that Jake Shields Martin Campman fight. You know,
yeah,
maybe calling out someone there. Yeah, but I mean, Carlos Condit. I mean, we've you know, I think we're all pretty. We like Carlos Condit. He's got a pretty fan friendly style as well.
Yeah.
Sometimes to his detriment, but you know, it was the. He lost to Martin Campman, and it was Jake Ellenberger he was fighting that had some rough spots against.
We had a lot of rough spots against Rory McDonald.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he got that you know, not saved by the bell, but that you know, like 11th hour stoppage on Rory McDonald, because I think he was pretty clearly losing that fight before getting a stoppage in the third round.
Well, there would have been a case for turning that fight into a draw.
Mm.
You guys, I mean, he clearly lost the first two rounds, but that third round could have very easily turned into a 10-8 round.
Yeah,
had it gone the distance.
I mean, yeah, he stopped him with about 10 seconds left, and he got a split decision over Jake Ellenberger. So he's coming off a three, you know, the Dan Hardy was his third win in a row. And yeah, you know, he's definitely, you know, got an argument to be considered, you know, in another couple of fights, maybe a potential title candidate and former WEC title holder. So,
well, one thing that we've kind of criticized him for, and I don't think that this fight actually really ends that criticism, is that he fights to the level of his opponent.
Right.
Like, you know, he fought Martin Campman to a very even fight, and Martin Campman was a high-level guy. He lost the decision, but it was really close.
Yeah, split decision, yeah.
And then he had a split decision against Ellenberger, and it's like, yep. Whoa, really?
Yeah.
You just had a split decision against Campman, and you won that one, but just, you know, barely, again. And then, you know, he had that last fight, which he almost lost and won at the very end. So it seems like, you know, he kind of fights to the level of his opponent. Dan Hardy is the kind of guy who's going to swing until you fall down.
Yeah.
And that's what he did. He came out on the winning side, but, you know, Dan Hardy is not really the kind of fighter who leads to a decision as a general rule, which is kind of strange because in his UFC career, he's actually had mostly decisions, win or loss. But, you know, for the most part, you know, he's the guy who stands and bangs and hits hard.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's what Condit did right back at him. And it worked in Condit's favor. You know, he got the first round knockout. But yeah, it'll be really interesting to see where he goes from here. Condit has said that he is down to fight GSP, even though they're on the same team.
Right, they both have the Jackson attachment, which is great. You know, like, not to get too much into the fight politics. I mean, like, I understand teammates, like, don't want to fight each other, but especially for a belt, like, you know, it's good to see. Because we have, like, the AKA guys. You know, Koscheck and Fitch and Swick, and they're like, no, we'd never fight each other. And, you know, I mean, so far they haven't, it's not been a problem because none of them are holding the title, but, I mean,
if one of them does, yeah.
Such a logjam in that division. So it is kind of refreshing to have a guy be like, yeah, no, if it was for the title, I'd totally fight my teammates. So.
Well, and then there's been historical situations like this, too, like with Rashad Evans and Keith Jardine, and now Rashad Evans and the possibility of John Jones as teammates. And then the shootbox debacle in Pride back in the day where Vanderlei Silva was the number one, or Vanderlei Silva was the champion, while Shogun was the number one ranked guy in the world because he won the tournament. It's like, you know, but they can't fight each other because they're buddies.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, this has happened in the past, and it's cool to hear a guy be like, yeah, I'll fight my teammate. He's holding the belt. I want that thing.
Yeah. But, yeah, so big things coming up for Carlos Condit after this, I would imagine, because, you know, he lost his debut in the UFC after coming up from the WC, right? That was the Campman fight, I believe.
Yeah, he did lose his debut. But,
so, I mean,
you know,
like a little bit of the hype. You know, he had to rebuild since then, but he's put together some solid wins and got the highlight reel put together now with the vicious stoppage over Rory McDonald. Now the KO that is going to be in every highlight package of his from now till hereafter.
That was a real tough debut, though. I mean,
yeah.
Campman's a solid guy. I mean, Campman's done nothing but look good since then.
Speaking of Campman, I guess most people are, and Jake Shields rightfully the favorite. We'll get into the preview more often, but even though losing, I want to see Dan Hardy and Martin Campman fight. Like,
yeah.
Badly.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
So, like, under the assumption that Jake Shields beats Martin Campman, I want to see Dan Hardy and Martin Campman punch each other in the face until one of them falls over.
Excellent, but we'll get back to that.
We will get back to that. But any other thoughts on that? I mean, like, I thought it was a pretty obviously until the knockout. I thought it was a pretty well matched round. You know, they're both kind of showing the back and forth, throwing leg kicks, throwing some combos on each other. But yeah, I thought it was a I figured Dan Hardy might take a decision on this because I know both guys are kind of notoriously hard to finish. But I mean, I think even still in one round, we got a pretty fun fight with a ridiculous finish.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah, and you know, I was really worried that maybe Carlos Condit had knocked the punk / sassy British personality out of Dan Hardy with his left hand. But fortunately, Carlos Condit got knockout of the night. Dan Hardy had the line of the night. And I don't know if you caught it, but Joe Rogan interviewed Carlos Condit, then came to Dan Hardy. He's like, Dan, can you analyze what went wrong in that fight?
I got punched in the face.
Yeah.
That's like, my terrible British accent, by the way.
But no, that's great, because like so many fighters, when they take a bad loss, I mean, like Forrest Griffin, like literally ran out of the ring after...
Crying.
Yeah, like after getting his... it handed
celebrated
to him by
author, Forrest Griffin!
but ran out of the ring after losing to Anderson Silva, and like Dan Hardy just shows, like, you got to own a loss. Like, if you're going to, like, you know... If you're conscious and can still string words together, like self-effacing, like handle a loss, and like that's, I think he did a good job with, being humble and giving Carlos Condit his due. And
That wasn't even Forrest Griffin's first time running from the ring crying. He also did that against Keith Jardine.
Really? Okay.
But he got interviewed first on that one. He was, you know, already in tears. I don't know why they even put a mic in front of his face, because he was sitting in the corner crying, and then Joe Rogan's like, Forrest, what happened? And Forrest's like, I was doing everything I had to do in there, landing the leg kicks, and I just got knocked the fuck out and ran away.
Yeah. But, man, you got to, again, you got to own those losses. I think Dan Hardy did a good job of damage control on that, because, you know, some guys are knocked out, and you don't hear from them, and you're like, well, what happened? And,
yeah.
I think it was very, very humble in defeat. So, but, yeah, no, I'm excited to see what's up next for Carlos Condit, and, I don't think he'd win a title shot against, well, George St. Pierre, you know.
No, I wouldn't expect that to happen.
I think he's another potentially interesting title contender. And again, you know, the welterweight division needs a few of this.
They do.
Yeah. So another Brit on the show. And also, do we call them Englishmen or Brits? What do you prefer?
You know, I don't really care.
Right.
I prefer red coats.
Okay, yeah, limeys also works.
That's a little jingoistic, I would say.
Red coats? Come on, it's cute. It's
well, the sport is jingoistic, so screw it.
All right, but Mike Pyle, unanimous decision over John Hathaway.
Yeah, didn't see that coming.
Yeah, no, we were all kind of pleasantly, I don't know, pleasantly surprised. But I mean,
I was pleasantly surprised because I'm an American, damn it.
Yeah! USA! USA! Oh, come on. Catch America Fever.
I'm not going to argue with you guys. Good. What? I like the Constitution. I don't really care about sports. Sorry. Anyways.
You're caring about sports right now.
Yeah, but not from a nationalistic sense.
Gotcha. Not an us versus them type of mentality.
Right. I just want to...
Okay.
I guess from a different country. I automatically don't like him.
We can like him, just not as much as our guy.
And he does watch the World Cup.
Ugh.
So, also, I had the World Cup results spoiled for me when they were on, because ESPN aired them in real time.
Ooh.
Yeah. Anyways.
Well, you know that octopus was spoiling them for everyone anyway. Damn octopus.
It was so smart. They should get them... I think they ate them, but they should get them for, like, the UFC.
They ate the smartest octopus ever!
Yeah. Now you gain its power, yeah. So anyways, I think we were all, I guess pleasantly surprised from the standpoint that, like, Mike Pyle's kind of, like...
An American?
Not shown that much...
Oh, yeah, we were pleasantly surprised by that, too.
Right, you know, because he's... hasn't been, like, amazing in the UFC, you know?
No, he's been, you know, okay.
Right.
And then he beat the Stellar Brit, so that sounds about right.
Yeah. But, I think, Hathaway was one of those guys, who one of the few exceptions to the whole, like, oh, British guys are good standing up but don't have any garbage wrestlers. And he had, like, you know, pretty good wrestling defense.
Don't be jealous.
But not good enough.
Right. I wasn't being jealous. I was like pausing the conversation to see if someone else would jump in.
Yeah, I mean, his wrestling defense was, you know, it was good enough against a guy like Diego Sanchez, but you get a strong guy like Mike Pyle in there, and that can change.
I like last week when we were predicting this. We're like, well, he's already shown he's got good wrestling defense because he beat Diego Sanchez, who's pretty good at wrestling. Now we're like, yeah, I mean, Diego Sanchez was kind of fat and out of shape in that fight anyway. So.
Yeah, well, one thing that has to be noted for that is that Diego Sanchez was just moving back up to 170 from 155. And Mike Pyle says he's a big 170-er, and I'm inclined to believe him. You know, I didn't hear Joe Rogan be like, he's huge for a welterweight. You know, he's not the Tiago Alves or Anthony Johnson
welterweight. He cuts down from 260 pounds somehow.
Yeah. But, you know, he's not a tiny guy who maybe would be going down a weight class, per se. So when Diego wasn't able to take down John Hathaway, I was like, okay, that's a lightweight taking down a welterweight, and it's not happening. But a welterweight taking down a welterweight makes it a little different, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Now, that second round was pretty rough. I believe that was one where, Mike Pyle had Hathaway kind of in a choke-ish, the inverted triangle mount thing, and was just like punching him repeatedly in the face. And like, I wasn't worried about that fight being stopped, but
no, arguably 10-8.
Yeah, that's the thing. I know it was like, wow, that's like if you're gonna score something a 10-8 round, that's pretty close to.
That was a lot like when Roy Nelson fought Kimbo on The Ultimate Fighter, and he had him in the crucifix for like half a round, and it actually looked like he was hitting him a lot harder than Roy Nelson was hitting Kimbo, because Roy Nelson was even saying like, oh yeah, all you got to do is fucking
slap him. Pyle was throwing some elbows and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he was throwing some legit stuff, and Hathaway had a big ol' rhinoceros horn on his forehead afterwards. So, you know, there was some damage. But, yeah, I mean, none of them were, like, lethal finishing blows. If it would have been stopped, I mean, there would have been justification for it, I guess, but it wasn't necessary either.
Right.
It was just one of those kind of accumulation of blows, seeing, like, how many times are you going to let that guy get hit in the forehead?
Right.
You know, like...
No, it's like one thing, like... I would have been kind of upset if they had stopped the fight on that, because like he didn't seem to be in that much danger. Like if he had thrown him up the choke on harder, but like those punches, while certainly being punched hurts, I didn't think those were like going to do some serious like, you know, like career changing damage where the ref had to stop the fight.
Oh, I agree with that.
And it was just like a clear display of dominance on the ground there. So.
I definitely agree with that. It's just that you know. Sometimes when you get, like, enough punches strung together, you know, I can see why the justification would be there. That said, I'm glad it didn't get stopped there because, you know, that would have been unsatisfying if nothing else.
Yeah.
But, yeah, definite dominance going on up in there on that.
Yeah, so, you know, all in all, good, obviously a good showing for Mike Pyle. And, I mean, John Hathaway still, you know, he's a young guy. I think he's only, like, 24 or something like that, so... You know, you gotta get that loss in sometime, and you know, the generic cliche, you learn from your losses.
Yes, don't let that happen to you. The reverse triangle, it sucks.
Punch in the face, yeah.
Yeah, at least he didn't get the reverse triangle Kimura combination, which it looked like Pyle was going there for a little bit.
I was actually surprised he didn't go for a submission, at least even, you know, especially towards the end of that round.
It looked to me like he was kind of trying for it for a little bit and just didn't. Have it, maybe didn't know it.
Yeah.
Because it looked like he was kind of like dinking around with his arm, like, ooh, I'm going to twist it, and I'm just going to punch him.
Mm.
So maybe Cole Miller's a little better at that.
Right, right.
Because, man, when he did that, I was like, damn.
Yeah. Another situation you don't want to get yourself caught in is having your shorts grabbed repeatedly by Chet Congo.
Hey, you know what? I think that may have saved him the fight, because apparently he would have lost otherwise.
No, he would have won, because Chet Congo had the point deducted.
Yes.
Right, right.
So it saved the fight for Brown.
Yes, yes.
Yes, because okay, Brown would have lost.
We're on the same page. And just to be clear, Chet Congo does speak English, correct, and understands English?
Yes, he's very eloquent in his pre-fight interviews.
Right, so he
speaks better English than GSP does.
So he could clearly hear the referee repeatedly warn him to stop holding the shorts.
And he kept doing it after was deducted.
Yeah,
he's lucky he didn't get a second point taken away.
Yeah, this fight did not do a lot for Chet Congo's image.
No, it didn't. I mean, it's good that he got the win. Yeah, or he didn't even get the win. It's good that he didn't lose for his sake because, you know, he had lost two straight, and then he got that pitiful win over Buentello.
Yeah.
Which, you know, any win's a win, but damn, that was not a very impressive win at all. Certainly, it wasn't a very impressive loss for Buentello either, so I'm not going to give him that.
Too much.
But, this has really been hurting Congo's image because Congo's just been a badass up until recently. You know, he's always like the guy that you don't want to stand with, but if you get him down, then you're okay. But his last two fights, it's been like, well, yeah, he beat Buentello, but... and then this one's like, he took the guy who was completely unknown... And basically fought like a complete wuss the whole time and was blatantly cheating to the point where he had a point taken away and had the fight turned into a draw and kept cheating for the rest of the fight.
Yeah, like I don't know why, because I'm generally like a pessimistic person, but for some reason I like to give people the benefit of a doubt, the doubt, you know? But like clearly in this case, like he was... fully aware of what he was doing, and purposefully doing it. Like you see fights all the time. Like, hey, let go of the shorts, guy. Let's go, and then like, that's it. Or like, hey, let go of the fence. Okay, Chet Congo clearly was up to something nefarious there. So.
Yeah, and I don't think it was even really doing him any good either. You know, like you can like do a quick grab on the shorts here and there to, you know, like do something. Mm. Or you can hold on to them just to like hang on to it, use it as a handle at some points. But they were just standing up against the cage doing nothing. It's not like, you know, the guy was taking them down and the shorts were the only thing Congo had to hold on to keep him from going down. He was just holding them.
Yeah.
No reason.
Yeah. So,
way to go, Chek.
Yeah, not a... Again, no one came out good in that fight. I guess, you know, Travis Brown definitely got the sympathy there. And, you know, it was a close fight. I think Congo would have won it had it not been for the short grabs anyway. Like, it was close, but I think he took two of the rounds. But, yeah, just like I think the draw is just leaves a sour taste in people's mouths, especially with the point deduction, you know. Like, if it's...
Yeah.
I don't know if I've actually ever... I guess I'd... can't speak from experience, but I don't think I've seen a fight where, like, two guys are just, like, so evenly matched and such a good fight, but no one clearly had the advantage that it scored a draw. It's usually something kind of suspect.
That happened when BJ Penn fought Cal Uno the second time.
Okay.
Like, the first time they fought, it was, like, 11 seconds.
Yeah.
And then the second time they fought, it was 25 minutes. And friggin' nobody won.
Yeah.
Weird.
Oof. So what other fights were on the main card there? Was that we had the Cyril Diabaty
and
Alexander Gustafsson fight, and
I'm glad Alexander won.
Yeah, that went I think it was a decent fight or a close-ish for a little bit, but then, you know, Gustafsson got the rear naked choke in the second round there, and then, you know, like, but that whole second round it was pretty clear that Diabaty was in trouble. I mean, Gustafsson went for that choke like three or four times, I think.
Yeah.
Before finally locking it on.
Yeah, and he got a nice cut up on Cyril. So that was... even when he wasn't looking like he was going to seek the choke in, it looked like he was in position to do some serious ground and pound and had him at least somewhat hurt. So that was cool. I don't like Cyril. He's got a pretty gross-looking beard.
You're upset with his facial hair.
Yeah. Shave that, man. Ugh.
Fair enough. I mean, a solid win, I guess, for Gustafsson in the light heavyweight division.
Sure.
I think before this he had the loss to Phil Davis. So, I don't know. You know, not too much to take away from that fight as far as, like, where those guys go from here.
But, no. Neither of them are, you know, big names as of yet.
Right.
That's probably the best exposure either of them have had up to this point. So, you know, good win for the Swede, was it?
I'm just going to assume he's Swedish.
Yeah, it's something like that. I'm not up on all my flags. I know the American flag, the Alaska flag,
And then after that, it gets kind of fuzzy.
Yeah.
Patriot.
I think Canadians have some kind of tree on their flag. Not quite sure.
I think it's pot leaf, yeah.
Pot leaf.
Yeah, Snoop Dogg.
Yeah. So, that was it for the, I guess, the officially televised fights. We did get to see one of the prelims, Paul Sass. Taking out Mark Holtz with a triangle choke. And that was, Sass wanted nothing of the stand-up.
I forgot about that fight.
Like, he was, and I don't blame him because he was really good on the ground, but, like, he's got a ways to go before becoming a well-rounded mixed martial artist.
Actually, I thought that fight was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Because
he was just all over Holtz on the ground. Like, anytime they got close, he just, like, either dropped a guard or die for a takedown. And
he wasn't even doing takedowns. Like, he would kind of go, like, fake for a takedown and then just pull guard.
Yeah.
Doing the old Nogueira trick. Because, Nogueira, great jiu-jitsu guy, but terrible takedowns. So, he'd shoot in, wait for you to sprawl, and just kind of grab you and pull you into his guard. And that's what this guy did. And he kept going for the same move over and over again. It was always the triangle. And eventually he got it. But I don't think he threw one punch the whole fight. That was crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I forgot about that fight. I'd been drinking a lot of Coors Light that night. Not Bud Light, though, because they didn't pay me to say this.
Oh.
Bastards.
Yeah.
Wait, you were able to drink that? I thought the difference was drinkability.
Well, the Coors Light wasn't all that drinkable, but it was,
it was there.
I was able to choke it down.
Right. All right, so I think that was it for the fights we saw. Worth mentioning, Claude Patrick beat James Wilkes, unanimous decision.
Spencer
Fisher finally got his win.
Yay!
Beating up Kurt Warburton, unanimous decision.
James McSweeney seems to have gotten a TKO'd.
Yeah, he is. I don't think he's long for the UFC. Like, I know he's friends with Rashad and those guys, but I don't think he's going to be around for much longer. Fabio Maldonado.
Who I've never even heard of.
Right. I'm kind of impressed I just got to say his name close to right.
That's good.
Are you sure?
But yeah, TKO punches. Close enough. Three. And then Rob Broughton. Beat up some guy who has V, K's, and Q's in his name.
Okay, that's cool.
Just go for it. Say, what do you think?
Where are we going?
That one right there.
Oh, snap.
V's, K's, and Q's.
Vinicus Capke de Quiros.
Yes, you got it.
I do like Vinicus, though. That's pretty cool
that's
name.
Pretty hardcore. But yeah, Rob Broughton.
Vinicus.
Get the...
my first son.
Rear naked. Yeah, got the rear naked choke round three, so... what do you guys think of this card? We'll talk about the tape delay stuff, all of that, in a minute. But, it was a free card, and, I think it was a better card than UFC 119. Maybe not on paper, but at least the fight quality, I thought.
Yeah, well, UFC 119 really just kind of played out poorly. I mean, that was a great lineup, but...
Right, and honestly, not all those fights were that. It was just, like, the main event was terrible, and that leaves always a bad... Like, it wasn't a great card to start with. It was, like, a decent card, but with a terrible main event. So that always just, like, really leaves a bad taste in people's mouth.
But even all the other fights, like, there were all these guys who, got a lot of knockouts, got a lot of submissions, and just none of them did them that night.
Right.
It looked like it was going to be awesome. It just didn't play out that way. And, it's hard to, like, place blame on really any one person, for any given fight there, because, other than Frank Mir, you can blame him all you want. Because all he did was push Krokop against the cage and wait for him to make a mistake and knee him in the face. But most of those fights, which is like, oh, he's going to knock me out. I better, play it safe. And the other guy is thinking the same thing.
Yeah.
This fight was certainly more exciting to watch.
Yeah, the main event and co-main event were, both exciting and decent fights. And then we had, the surprise Mike Pyle with the upset, as it were, I guess.
Really, the only bad fight to watch here was Chet Congo, which sounds weird saying.
Right.
But that was the worst fight on the card.
He's a little handsy.
Yeah. He's a little scaredy too.
Oh man, I don't know what was up.
I think he's gotten to the point where he's fighting for his job.
Yeah.
And I think he's actually trying too hard to fight for his job, because he's getting to the I must win at all costs mentality instead of the. Which, is a good mentality. It's good to win. But, Dana White also keeps around guys who are exciting and fun to watch.
Right.
Which Congo has always been exciting and fun to watch. Well, you know, you'd think he could lose a few more fights and, yep. you know, and just still have a job. He's freaking Chuck Congo. And he's, you know, especially at heavyweight where they don't tend to, you know, put people on the chopping block too early unless they have a bad attitude like Todd Duffy.
Allegedly.
But, yeah, allegedly. But, you know, I'm going to take Dana White's word for it. Like the gospel.
Well, he does still have a Twitter account. So.
Yes.
Somehow, some way.
Unlike Todd Duffy.
Yeah. So there you go. I can't even ask Todd Duffy, hey, what's your attitude?
It's great. Shut up.
Yeah, Chuck Congo's getting into this weird thing where he's actually changing his fighting style to something he's not as good at because he's scared of the possibility of losing.
Right.
Which is strange and boring to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know what's next for Chuck Congo. Maybe.
Maybe an undercard. Who
right,
knows?
Right. I know we've got the Brendan Schaub, Gabriel Gonzaga on this UFC 121, I believe.
Ooh, I wouldn't mind seeing either of them fight him.
All right. I mean, maybe we can see that happen.
I certainly couldn't see him trying to grapple with Congo or
Gonzaga.
Gonzaga. Yeah. Congo wouldn't want any of his guard.
Right.
I would think. So yeah. Those would be fun.
Yeah, I mean, Chuck Congo clearly is, at this point is just not, you know, he's not that, he's not well-rounded. He's got, you know, pretty good stand-up, but like and you mentioned, like what we've seen of him lately, he's just not even willing to, you know, I guess throw or bring that fight the way he used to, you know.
And, yeah.
You know, maybe he's playing it safe, but it's, you know, yeah. even playing it safe, it hasn't helped him that much.
No.
So. Got to go full speed, man. Just go for it.
So how about Travis Brown, though? Some guy we've never heard of, you know, almost won the fight.
Yeah, I mean, I believe Brown was the one, he beat McSweeney on his last fight and then has the Chuck Congo draw. And, like, you know, sometimes with draws, maybe you give him the rematch, but I don't think anyone's really too excited about it.
No, I don't want to see it.
Not that exciting.
But, yeah, I mean, he got a draw. Some could say that he, you know, could have won the fight. Yeah. Joe Rogan clearly seemed to think that, given what he was saying during the fight. He looked like he was a bit tired in the end.
Yeah.
I mean, Congo really turned it on in the end of the fight when he wasn't doing much. But
I don't know. What's Matt Mitrione up to? Can him and Travis Brown fight or him and Chuck Congo fight?
Ooh, there we go. Yeah. Matt Mitrione against Chuck Congo. One for the ages.
Yeah. That would be messy. But, yeah, again, not a lot to take away from this fight because obviously a draw, no clear winner, and, you know, neither guy looked too impressive.
Nope.
But, I mean, Travis Brown was able to hurt Congo a little bit on the feet, which was – but, I mean, he was throwing some – and
he was throwing some bombs.
Yeah, but he was wild and reckless, I think. It was
Vanderlei Silva style.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. So I think that's about it as far as running down the fights on UFC 120.
I don't have anything else to say about it.
Okay.
So if we had seen it live...
Like most of the world did, by the
way. Yeah, and then we talked about it, then somebody out there would be very angry with us.
Well,
yeah.
It wouldn't actually matter because this doesn't get played for a day and a half after we talk about
it. Right, but if we had seen it live and maybe, you know, threw it up on... If we had a TV network or
if
something like that...
If we tweeted about it,
yeah,
maybe.
If we were respected sports journalists, then...
We aren't?
Well, I mean, you know, within this room, we certainly are.
And in your homes.
Yes. So anyways, what happened is ESPN, you know, the sports network.
The sports network.
Right.
Not just any sports network.
The sports network. And this is ESPN 1, I believe. But yeah.
Ooh, that's,
you know,
the best one,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, we in the States here got to see the UFC 120 card in prime time on Spike.
Yeah.
And it happened earlier that afternoon, like, what, four hours earlier, I think?
Which happens quite frequently is that we see them tape delayed here.
With the overseas cards.
Yeah,
and in Alaska, I think in Alaska we get most of their live cards actually live. It's Strikeforce that really gets tape delayed up here.
Okay, well, then the international cards.
Right. In general are tape delayed.
Yeah.
But for some reason, I think the reason, like, a lot of people kind of got upset because ESPN actually aired the results of the fight card, which I don't think they've done before with tape-delayed cards. But people got really upset, And I guess people started tweeting Dana White, like, at Dana White, why are the results of MMA on ESPN?
And then Dana White's ears started burning, went, Dana White! Twitter.
But his response was basically, hey...
Can we get it? I quote?
Well, yeah, let's see if I can find it. But it's basically the equivalent of, take it up with ESPN, it's not my problem. Something like that.
No, that's not what you said earlier.
He was like, sick 'em, boys.
Get on! And, you know, Dana White and that Twitter, like, you know, bless him and bless Twitter, really. It is the greatest invention for a guy like Dana White.
Yeah, by the
someone
way,
that just shoots from the hip constantly.
And it's fun because, like, there's been a couple... Okay, you guys need to email and tweet ESPN for effing up the results, not me.
Okay.
So, and then promptly there was lots of, like, you know, the Twitter top 10 searches or trending on Twitter was like, ESPN, boo! hash mark or whatever.
Hashtag, right. ESPN, boo, right. Literal.
And a couple MMA journalists pointed it out that, hey, if you want to be upset with any network, maybe we should be upset with Spike TV for tape delaying a sporting event.
Yeah, and you say a few mixed martial arts journalists, because that's really all there are.
Yeah.
This is still a pretty... It hasn't really gotten into the echelon of sport as viewed by the American public as a whole.
Right, yeah. I mean, and certainly, you know, we have, MMA Live, which is on ESPN2 now. So you get some stuff there, but yeah, a lot of it is, you know, the whole, like, yeah, like old school guys in their sports reporter fedoras aren't covering MMA. But yeah, no, like, so this is, so people got a little upset at ESPN, and I think that's silly. Because, you know, the thing I think of is when the Olympics are on. Those, especially like the last couple Olympics we've had, they've been, we had the Winter Olympics most recently, we're in, what, Canada, I believe? And then we had the Summer Olympics in Beijing before that. So, you know, there's, especially the Beijing Olympics, there was a pretty big time gap between when the events happened and when they aired here in the States.
Yeah.
That's true.
And
there was a lot more events going on. Right. I don't mean to just kind of interrupt you in the middle of your thing, but there were a lot of events going on. And while, you know, mixed martial arts and UFC is almost the only game in town, and it is the only game in town where a serious sports journalistic organization will feel like reporting it.
Right, yeah. I mean, if MMA is going to get covered by, like, ESPN or something like that, it's mostly going to be UFC stuff.
Yeah, I've never heard of them talking about Strikeforce
Bellator. I think the only thing that got mentioned was when Fedor lost to Fabricio Werdum, and it wasn't even mentioned in what organization, I don't think, really. it's incumbent upon the viewer to... First of all, you're like, hey, you know, like, oh, the Olympics are on. Swimming's happening at, like, noon, but they're not going to broadcast it here in the States until, like, 7 p.m. I should avoid sports channels and the internet, web places that would report on that.
And if you're a 24-hour news organization, right, you really have to pump it as soon as you get your hands on it. There's no time to wait.
This is where I get all uppity because, you know, like, I'm not a sports journalist, but I am a journalist here in Anchorage and whatever, quote-unquote. But, like, yeah, I went to... Like, that's, like...
And he takes
news
it
is
pretty
news.
Serious.
Like, yes. It's not, like... if you want to make an argument about the UFC and MMA being sports entertainment or it's entertainment and sport at the same time, but, like, for a sports reporter or someone covering... the event, like, the results are news, and it's not up to, it's not the journalist's job, and it's not the sports or the media entity's job to, you know, shelter
the fan, yeah, who doesn't want to have the spoilers. And people in, you know, football fans have to go through this all the time because there's so many different games and so many different time zones on so many different channels that, you know, the responsibility is really on the viewer to avoid any... If it matters so much to you, then it's really the ball's in your court to keep it away from any spoilers. So,
right.
I mean, we're trying to make it a serious sport, so we need to treat it as such and not get mad at organizations that, that would treat it the same way as any other sport.
ESPN, stop covering MMA like it's a real sport.
Yeah.
Right.
Jerks.
But I do understand some of the frustration, like, from a fan level, because this was on, like, the ESPN sport ticker scroll as well. And I don't think there was, and again, it goes back to like, should they have to give a warning for a live sporting event that's happening? They really shouldn't. But, you know, like you'll notice a lot of MMA websites, they don't necessarily just throw the results up. It's like, hey, click here for results, live results.
Well, you don't have that option on a ticket.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so I think it's, but again, so like, I understand why people were frustrated, but I still think it's silly. And again, if you want to get upset with someone, and not necessarily like Spike TV can do anything about it, but if you're going to get upset with someone, be upset with the network that's taped lane sporting events.
And quit crying to your mama, Dana White, you little twerps. Dana, yeah. Make you stop.
You better at ESPN and swear at them like you swear at people who disagree with you. Like, have you been to Dana White's Twitter? Like, half of his tweets are replying to people and calling them, like, dick faces. This is the president of a multi-million-dollar company.
That's why we love him.
One thing I would say, though, is I can see how, since this is the first time it happened, people weren't necessarily expecting this to happen on ESPN.
Right, like the first time, like the ESPN, like quote unquote spoiled. But yeah,
you know, maybe they considered it to be safe grounds.
Yeah, now
it's not safe ground. You know, it's like you've always known. You know, don't go to your favorite fight forum.
Yeah.
On a day like this, because some jerk is going to post it just to piss everyone off.
Yeah.
ESPN's not necessarily doing it for that reason, but they're going to post it.
Yeah.
We know that now. But I think the verdict is in, because I agree with you guys. Quit your bitching, fans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is a sport. We're going to treat it as such.
And also, when do MMA fans watch other sports? I don't get that at all. Like,
how many sports do you want to be into?
Yeah.
you're at ESPN, you're hunting down, you know, your fantasy football picks,
and then
the UFC scrolls by and you start freaking out.
Yeah, what are you watching college football for anyways? Like,
oh,
seriously.
Man.
But yeah, no, so I don't think it's going to be a big issue. I just think it's, you know, it's funny, something every other sports fan has to deal with, you know, like, oh, you know, like, I was watching this NFC game, and they showed the AFC scores on the other game that I was taping. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that happens all the time.
You need to deal with that, yeah.
Right, put it on your big boy pants, MMA fans.
Now, it'll probably never get to that size. Like, I don't know how much more room for other organizations there will be. What do you think, like, the max... Five?
I have no idea.
Yeah, I mean, well, there's no way for us to know, especially,
right,
like, how big it's going to get. But, you know, boxing's been around for decades, but that's mostly the singular promoter's game.
Right, no, but I mean, I was just using the AFC-NFC thing as an example of, like, oh, simultaneous events happening that you're both in. Like, but, I mean, we've had two MMA cards on at the same time. I think a Strikeforce and a WEC went head-to-head before. And you gotta pick your battles.
Yeah, it happens, but it doesn't happen regularly. But they're also not gonna spoil each other's events, Eric Bischoff style, like that would happen in a NFL game, because in the NFL, you know, they're different teams that are playing different games in different leagues, but they're all in the NFL. You know, the UFC and Strikeforce aren't under the same banner, so there's no reason why, if you're watching the UFC live and you're taping Strikeforce, the UFC is not just going to be like, heh, Bator just lost.
Yeah. Well,
you will get a smiley face.
You will get a smiley face tweet. Yeah, but again, I think there's a difference between that and, like, news organizations reporting things as they happen. So, again, like, I think it's kind of much ado about nothing, but I figured it was worth a mention because the internets went crazy.
And there are a lot of, you know, sports fans that, you know, are just glad to be obsessed with sports. So, like,
right,
football will be their main source of entertainment, and then, you know, they'll have a good passion for UFC.
Yeah. But all in all, I think it's kind of funny because, like, the MMA fans in general seem to be, like, you know, you're like, the seeking acceptance from the mainstream, you know. It's like, oh, MMA is going to be a real sport. We're going to get legalized in New York. And, you know, everyone, even my mom's going to finally start liking the MMA stuff. It'll be great. ESPN's covering it like a real sport. Stop it!
Well, MMA fans, like the diehard, hardcore people, have always been pretty funny about this kind of stuff.
Because
they've always been seeking such acceptance. You know, before it was on Spike TV, they're like, one of these days, man, we can just show this to the world, and they're going to love this sport. And they get it on Spike TV, and they're like, whoa, our pay-per-views aren't $30 anymore?
Yeah.
They're 50?
Yeah.
Holy crap.
Yeah. And then
Dana White's so greedy.
UFC sold out, man. Yeah, so I don't know. But so back to, like, actual relevant MMA stuff. UFC 121 this weekend, huh?
Oh, snap. Brocktober is coming to an end. You know, I did watch the first half of the last episode of UFC Primetime.
How was it? Does he still have the beard?
That beard is amazing.
Oh, I hope he keeps it for the fight.
He trimmed it down a little bit, it looks like, during the UFC 120
interview.
Yeah, it looked like it was trimmed down a bit from the TV show, because, man, on that TV show, that was a mighty Viking beard. He looked like he should just be butt naked, swinging an axe over his head, charging Cain Velasquez.
Running through the wild, yeah. Yeah, I gotcha. But yeah, so I guess we'll start with the... want to start at the top and work our way down, or how are you feeling?
Let's do that.
Okay,
yeah.
So for the UFC Undisputed Heavyweight Championship of the world, universe, whatever.
Ooh.
Brock Lesnar, Cain Velasquez, and I just have to point this out, though. It's being billed as such. If he were to win, Cain Velasquez would be the first Mexican champion. He was born in the United States.
Was he?
Yep.
Okay.
So like, I have no problem with him being like, you know, the first, like, you know,
Mexican American
heritage or any of that. But like, it's straight up false to say he'd be the first Mexican champion.
Because they want some of that boxing scratch. You know?
Yeah. And like, I get the appeal. Like, that's like a marketing thing.
His parents are from Mexico,
yes,
though, right?
But he was born in the United States.
Because, like, his dad was picking lettuce.
Right. Like, I believe he was born in the United States of Mexican immigrants.
Okay.
But, like, he is, yeah.
And it sounds like an illegal immigrant.
Yeah. What? I have no idea.
I have no idea either, but...
What if they deport him after he wins the belt?
Yeah. Oh, no!
Well, being that he was born here...
Yeah. So does that mean that you're going for a Velasquez?
Yeah, I guess his parents would be deported. I apologize. Yeah, I'm actually going to go with Velasquez on this. And not to say Brock Lesnar can't win this, because we sure know Brock Lesnar can take a bunch of punches
Man,
and then win.
Can't he, though?
Oh, goodness gracious. But, I think the key factor here is going to be, for Brock Lesnar, in Brock Lesnar's favor at least, the size. He is much bigger than Cain Velasquez. But aside from that, you know, maybe the wrestling might be a bit sharper, we'll see. But, I mean, Cain Velasquez...
he's sharp.
Much better stand-up.
Yeah.
He's got much better stand-up, but...
Crisper, faster, yeah.
Yeah, well, he's got much better stand-up.
Yeah.
But, he's going to be fighting a lot of size here, like you mentioned, and he's going to have probably a speed advantage, but given the size difference, it's not going to be that much of a speed advantage, because, you know, he's quick, he's fast, but Brock Lesnar, for being an extra 40 pounds, isn't slowed down by that 40 pounds as much as most guys. He carries it well, yeah. He does a good job of moving that stuff around pretty quickly, and he's got some good cardio. We haven't really seen him in the deep waters, in terms of, fighting for a long time. The longest we've seen him fight was a 15-minute fight against Heath Herring. But, you know, that was also the longest we've ever seen Cain Velasquez fight when he fought Chuck Congo.
Right. And, you know, I guess Cain Velasquez had a more challenging time. Brock Lesnar was basically just like...
Yeah, he just kind of mauled Herring.
Right, he just kind of wrote him out. Whereas Cain Velasquez... pretty dominant over Chuck Congo, but I believe, like, basically the beginning of each round, got punched several times in the face before getting a takedown.
Yeah.
Winning each round.
Yeah, and he almost got knocked out three times in that fight. Which leads to another thing, and is that Brock Lesnar may not have the best stand-up, but I've never seen him hit somebody without them falling down.
He punches hard.
And he doesn't even necessarily have to land clean for them to fall down. Right. It's just like a push, almost, and they fall down, because he's big and strong.
Yeah.
And, should he get on top? I'm not going to say that Cain Velasquez has a weak chin, because I've got no real basis for saying that, but, you know, I've only seen it get cracked a couple times, and granted that was by Congo, but he looked to be in trouble every time that happened, so his chin is maybe not invulnerable.
Right.
Brock Lesnar, on the other hand, took the best that Carwin had to offer, and Carwin has been known to destroy fools with his hands.
Yeah.
So, you know, I would expect, in terms of the durability of the chin, Brock Lesnar would have the edge on that.
And we can't discount the beard power either.
But who knows if we'll still have the beard. Because he might be one of those guys that doesn't shave at all during training.
Right.
And then, you know, shaves it all off when he's going to be in front of the cameras. Because we've never seen him train before. So who knows if he's, you know, always clean cut.
Was it hitting tires with the sledgehammer?
He didn't do that, but he did, like, the rope thing where he, like, does the monkey but holding some big old ropes.
Okay.
And then they went to a field because it was, like, a nice October day in
and
Minnesota.
Just, like, punched holes in it or something?
He lifted it above his head entire field.
He was just punching holes in the earth.
They just did some sprints and stuff, and there were, like, some kids playing on a playground nearby looking
and
at all these...
scared them.
Look at all these big guys charging.
Eat your steak, kids, but don't forget the salad.
And then Cain Velasquez just went to a Latino school and was a role model.
Good for him.
Yeah, good for him.
Okay, so it sounds like you're taking Brock Lesnar in this fight?
I'm taking Brock Lesnar. I think the size is going to be too much. I think this is a fight where Cain Velasquez might be a more all-around talented, like technically fighter. But I think the physical attributes of Brock Lesnar are going to be too much of this fight.
Seems to be a constant thing we talk about with Brock Lesnar, with his, like, he might not be the best fighter in this fight, but he's got Donkey Kong strength.
Well, you know, that's not what we were talking about last time he fought, because, you know, he fought an equal guy. Granted, he won basically based on another physical attribute, but it was cardio, which is, you know, something that you work on, as opposed to just being big and strong, which you do work on that, but, you know, that's the kind of thing that, you know, nobody's ever going to just be out-muscling Brock Lesnar because they lifted a bunch of weights, unless they did a whole lot of steroids.
Mm.
Mm. But I'm not going to get into that.
No, we're not.
I'm actually a little more excited about the next opponent for whoever the winner of this fight is, in Junior Dos Santos, because I think that provides a more interesting challenge. Not to completely discount Cain Velasquez, but I don't really see him winning this fight. Other than, you know, possibly by a decision or wearing Lesnar down and finishing him late, just because, you know, Cain Velasquez, I guess, is supposed to be known as a cardio machine, even though we haven't seen him do much late in the fight. You know, he's supposed to be one. And Brock Lesnar is, you know, he says he is, but he's a big guy, and, you know, that can always be questioned.
Yeah.
So, once again, like when we were talking about the Shane Carwin-Brock Lesnar fight, like, there's so many question marks here. And there's still a lot of question marks on this fight, because, you know, both of these guys have been very impressive, but there's also still a lot of question marks about both of them. How do they do under certain situations? We've never really seen Cain Velasquez tested other than getting hit by a few select shots by a guy who's really easily taken down. Mm. What happens if Brock Lesnar lands one of his shots and then Cain Velasquez has to shoot in real fast? You know, Brock Lesnar is not going to be so easily taken down. But on the flip side, what if Cain Velasquez gets an advantage and doesn't gas out like Shane Carwin did? How is Brock gonna, you know, come back a second round, a third round, a fourth round? Is that gonna, you know, continually happen? So, you know, there's a lot of things that we don't know really about either fighter, which I think is one of the things that makes this interesting.
Yeah.
But I think just given what we know, I've got to lean towards Brock Lesnar.
All right, Matt, tiebreaker.
Woof, that's gonna be a tough one, man.
Keep in mind, Cain Velasquez has a brown pride tattoo.
Brock
Lesnar is a real American. He's from Minnesota.
Yes,
man.
But Brock Lesnar has a penis tattooed on his chest right in between his pectoral muscles.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. Advantage Lesnar. Yeah. You know what? I wouldn't know what to do, man. I'll just go with my my normal, go with the underdog, so I guess Cain Velasquez on this one. But honestly,
good for you.
I really don't know. Like, it's going to be so cool. I'm looking forward to it.
Two giant men just punching each other.
Well, I like Cain Velasquez a whole lot because he's just quick, and he's got great punching.
Well,
and so, but then, you know, Brock Lesnar is no slouch. Like, he's pretty quick.
He's basically the Norse god of thunder. I mean,
well, I don't want to go that far, but you know, I mean, he's really quick, and he can take a great punch. And, you know, how many punches in a row could Cain Velasquez, you know, get onto his face?
We'll find out.
One thing I would like to say, though, just to throw it out there, is that this would not be the first time that I've potentially greatly underestimated Cain Velasquez. I picked him to totally lose against Nogueira.
Mm.
And I even said, you know, I don't see how he's going to win this fight.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't seem to hit very hard in his previous two fights, and Nogueira is known for having an incredible chin. And, you know, obviously he's not going to submit Nogueira. And then he went out there and completely proved me wrong. Made me look like an idiot.
Yeah,
knocked him out in the first round. Which could either be incredibly impressive, or, you know, it's one of those things like, has Nogueira sunk that far? Because, you know, like, he'd never been knocked out, and all of a sudden he's knocked out twice in a 2 year span, a year and a half span, is it that Frank Mir and Cain Velasquez are really this awesome, or is it that Noguera of 2010 is not Noguera of 2003?
Right.
So I think that's actually maybe another question mark that is thrown over this fight. Cain Velasquez looked amazing in his last fight, but, that could be due to the fact that he was fighting a legend that was still on top of his game, or it could be due to the fact that he was fighting a legend that is no longer mm-hmm. on top of his game. So I think that's one of the things that's going to be answered at this pay-per-view as well, if his punches have much of an effect on Brock Lesnar.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to the co-main event. Jake Shields making his UFC debut, fresh off of a win in Strikeforce over Dan Henderson.
Yes.
And on Martin Kampman, the hitman?
The hitman.
Right, and I don't think Jake Shields has a cool nickname or nickname.
No. I don't think he does. No.
Yeah.
He's that guy.
I'll call him Jake Blues from now on.
I'm just going to call him Jake Shields.
All right.
That seems like a reasonable thing to call him.
Yeah. Interesting style matchup. Jake Shields, known for his ground game. Martin Kampman, he enjoys standing and punching people, but he's got a pretty solid. He's not terrible on the ground.
I would say that Kampman is the more well-rounded of the
yes.
two fighters. That said, I would say that Jake Shields is better at doing what he wants to do. Like Jake,
controlling where the fight takes place.
Jake Shields drags you into his world. He's kind of got the John Fitch thing going on, although he's a bit more of a finisher than Fitch is. He's not just completely embracing the grind. He's, he drags you into the world. And he is a jiu-jitsu guy at heart. I think he's more of a jiu-jitsu guy than a wrestler.
Mm.
His last couple of fights, he's mostly done the wrestling, but he's got a lot of submissions on his record as well. So it's not like he's completely a decision fighter. And to his credit, the last two guys he fought, which were, his two biggest exposures, were against Mayhem Miller and Dan Henderson.
Two guys
and,
were terribly hard to finish.
Yeah. I mean, Mayhem Miller is not really like a world beater, but he's notoriously just hard to put away. And then Dan Henderson, everyone was expecting him to win.
Yep.
So, I mean, the fact that Jake Shields even came out with a victory was impressive enough. And he also showed a lot of heart in coming back from, basically getting knocked out in the first round. And,
Yeah, he was in trouble early on in that fight. And
he
looked
like,
a lot of people wrong.
He looked to me like he was knocked out and woke up when he hit the floor, but, immediately popped back up and went for a takedown. He fought those two guys and didn't finish them, but he's got a lot of other finishes. So I think he's got kind of a unwarranted, boring fighter stigma to him.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this should be a very fun fight. If Shields can get it to the ground, I wouldn't be surprised if he could win it. I don't know if he could get a submission on Kampman, because Kampman's really good on the ground also.
Yeah.
But I think he could, do some damage on the top and, end up with probably a decision victory. But if Kampman can keep the fight standing, then I think he should get a pretty easy win there.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, yeah... And I'm going to play it safe here, and I mean, I do favor Jake Shields in this because, he has that ability to control where the fight takes place, and I think he can get to the ground and keep it there. Again, probably not win it, win with submission, but maintain control and do damage from top. And you got to remember, in Strikeforce, you can't throw those elbows on the ground, and he can definitely do that here.
Oh, they can't?
Right.
Oh, that changes everything.
So, because Jake Shields can get that top control and actually land some elbows, maybe.
Ooh,
but,
and Kampman had that really gnarly cut a while back.
So gross.
I wonder if a few elbows to the forehead
might open it up.
Might, I don't know if he's necessarily got that. I mean, that's probably healed, but... the more cuts you get, the easier you are to cut down the line. So, I didn't even think about those elbows being illegal in Strikeforce. What a dumb rule.
Yeah, I don't know why that is. It seems kind of silly that they still have that.
So, that might change things. He could get a TKO stoppage by way of cut. Not that that's necessarily my, pick for the fight,
right.
But...
Definitely adds another wrinkle to the fight. But, I like Jake Shields, but certainly, like what you mentioned, if Martin Kampman... can keep it standing. Jake Shields has made some improvements in his stand-up, but he's still not a good... I don't want to say he's incompetent standing, but he's not, like... I don't think anyone has to worry about standing with Jake Shields.
Yeah.
Like, he's not someone you should... at least to this point, hasn't shown any reason to be fearful of him standing up.
Especially with Knockout. I mean, he might surprise somebody and out-technique them, although, you know, Martin Kampman is not going to be that guy that he surprises and out-techniques. But, you know, he doesn't really seem to have a whole lot of finishing power in terms of his strikes, even on the ground. So, yeah, I wouldn't be too worried about that. Although Martin Kampman doesn't seem to be, you know, a hugely devastating striker in his own right, but, you know, he can hit you a lot and, you know, do some damage. But, I mean, I can't think of any, like, you know, one-punch knockouts that he's got.
He's got a couple TKO, or at least one TKO in recent memory, back at UFC 93. But, yeah, I mean, a lot of his wins, you know, I guess he had that submission, I keep forgetting, over Jacob Volkman, but also the unanimous decision over Paulo Thiago, which you know, pretty clearly dominated.
Yeah, and that was a very impressive, probably his most impressive fight to date.
Right, because I think a lot of people were expecting Thiago to be, I mean, because Kampman did very well for himself on the ground there, where people were expecting him, like, yeah, he can probably do well standing, but if he gets to the ground, Paulo Thiago might get him in trouble, and it just wasn't the case. You know, Martin really showed.
Well, I mean, Paulo Thiago has been pretty impressive standing up in his UFC time, too. He knocked out Koscheck, but, you know, maybe that was a surprise. But then he knocked the crap out of Mike Swick, too, and, you know, he ended up winning with a choke, but he did the damage standing up.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, a solid co-main event. I'm excited about it. I mean, a lot, you know, we talked about Jake Shields, you know, when he was still in Strikeforce. Be like, oh, you know, he's pretty much the top of the Strikeforce, you know, obviously was the champion over there, kind of top of the division. But, you know, it was kind of like, what else does he have to do in Strikeforce? And turns out, not much. Now he's in the UFC, and we're going to get to see, you know, how he'll fare in tougher waters. And it sounds like, you know, should he beat Martin Kampman, he might be in line for a title shot against the Koscheck GSP winner, which I think is warranted. I mean, certainly you want to have that one introductory fight and see, you know, make sure he's, you know, can win before you just throw him in a title shot. But I mean, someone who was the Strikeforce title holder and someone who hasn't lost in like 5 years definitely, you know, should be on the short track for a UFC title fight.
Oh, definitely. And I mean, even Martin Kampman is not far off from it either.
Right.
The Paul Daly loss kind of throws a wrench into things, but, I mean, if he wins this fight, give him one more, and I would think he would probably be out there, too.
Yeah. And, you know, we were talking about Carlos Condit earlier. You know, he said he'd be interested in fighting, you know, either of those guys should they win. I don't know if that'll happen. I think it is interesting to note, I believe Jake Shields has a win already over Carlos Condit back several years ago. I got to double-check that.
Yeah, he beat Condit, I think, and Okami in the same night. Yushin Okami.
Yeah, Rumble on the Rock.
Pretty impressive.
Back in 06.
And Carlos Condit had something like a 2-minute fight.
Oof.
And Jake Shields had a 15-minute decision win over Yushin Okami and then had a second 15-minute win. So he had 30 minutes of fighting in one night and won them both.
Yeah. So a couple options at least for the, again, for the welterweight division, which, you know, people are kind of, it seems, on and off, people get concerned about, like, you know, for any time in any of the UFC divisions when there's a champion who's, you know, being dominant, won multiple title defenses, you're like, oh, well, who's left for him to fight? And at least, you know, it seems now welterweight's kind of coming around a little bit. You know, you've got a couple potential.
Yeah, there's some guys that are they're coming up a little bit.
Title challenger. So. Yeah.
Also, you know, you mentioned about people wanting a piece, you know, the winner.
Yeah.
Thiago Alves wants to fight the loser of this fight.
All right.
And he says he is, he's sticking to 170. Apparently he found a new nutritionist and, he is down to 195 from 205
he's
before.
He's just eating celery all the time.
Yeah.
That's all he eats.
So, you know, I guess he and Dana White had a come-to-Jesus meeting where it's like, you better not be missing weight anymore.
Yeah.
So he's lost some pounds. So he's still a big welterweight, but he's not a huge welterweight. But he says he's too short to go up to 185, which is reasonable, I suppose.
Can him and Anthony Johnson fight?
I would love that.
Yeah.
That would make my day.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because, like, you know, there's a few title challenges we were talking about, like how you got, you know, Jake Shields, that he'd come out of this victorious, probably has earned a title shot. Martin Kampman, if he wins, one or two fights away, maybe. But there's just a lot of fights in the welterweight division I want to see.
Yeah.
Like, not even necessarily against contenders, but, like, I want to see Anthony Johnson fight, you know, Alves or Hardy or Campman. I mean, that, all of those fights would be just...
I want to see Anthony Johnson fight Thiago Alves at light heavyweight. Because they could.
Yeah. No weight cutting involved.
Yeah, I want to see them in all their, you know, hydrated glory, just going at it. That would be really interesting.
No muscles to
me.
To be seen, just body.
Just body.
No ripped abs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever.
I got
those
you.
Aren't important.
No, they're not. They are not. I'm with you. So we talked about Paul Thiago and the Martin Campman, Jake Shields matchup, because Martin Campman coming off of his win over Thiago. Paul Thiago taking on Diego Sanchez.
I think he sends him back to lightweight.
Oof. Man, Diego Sanchez, it's that stevia, man. That stuff's no good for you.
The what?
Slash makes you go crazy. Sugar substitute. Stevia, have you heard of this?
No.
Ooh.
He swears by it.
I know of Splenda.
Yeah. I believe Splenda is a stevia, like they're somehow...
connected somehow. Maybe like Splenda is like refined stevia or whatever, but it's... It's like an energy-giving chemical sugar substitute deal.
Yeah, and Diego Sanchez is crazy for it.
Really?
And about many other things.
Yeah, well, he's
overall
a weird
crazy
dude all around.
Right.
But he is totally into it. And they have some all-sport drinks made of stevia, and it's, you know, it's kind of a health supplement.
Huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I don't think that'll actually factor into the fight. But yeah.
No.
The
yes
cartwheel
joke.
Might, though.
Yeah. Yeah, let's see here. I mean, I think Paul Thiago, you know, despite his showing against Martin Campman, still a pretty solid fighter and competent on the ground. Like, I don't think Diego Sanchez, you know, even if Diego can't get the takedowns here, I don't think he'll be able to finish Thiago on the ground. And I do think Thiago's going to have a striking advantage, you know, and Diego Sanchez, you know, and again, not like fighting against BJ Penn's like the best place to put on display your good your striking, but, you know, he didn't have more than like a 1-2 combo and stuff, it seemed, against BJ Penn. So, and, you know, I can't think of at least any recent fights where Diego Sanchez has showed like some outstanding power in his punches, but I think Thiago does have an advantage standing.
Yeah. I mean, Diego has looked really impressive standing in the past.
Yeah.
He destroyed Joe Riggs a long
past
time
over,
ago.
Man. Yeah.
And that Luigi, whatever his name is, Luigi
Fioravante.
Yeah. Whooped his ass. And I mean, he's had some great moments standing up.
Yeah.
Pretty terrible against BJ Penn standing up, but you know, hey, that's BJ Penn.
Most people, unless you're
Frankie Edgar,
yeah,
of all people, yeah, who seems to do just fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, other than that one, he looked really good standing up a lot of times. And I mean, his only two losses up until the BJ Penn fight were against some really high level guys, and then BJ Penn was really high level. And he kind of got scared and went back up to 170. Just,
yep.
And I guess I can see it as like, well, I'm clearly not going to beat that champ, so I'll go fight another champ. But he comes back up to welterweight, and maybe he just wasn't in shape for welterweight because, you know, you gain the weight too fast instead of putting on muscle. I mean, like, GSP has been talking about moving up to 185 for like a year now, and he's still like, oh, I'm just gaining weight. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do it right. Diego Sanchez more of did it on a whim because he got his ass kicked.
Right.
So maybe he's in better shape at 170 now, but maybe he really just needs to be a lightweight because he was always kind of a small welterweight to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was certainly no Thiago Alves. He was actually scheduled to fight Thiago Alves at one point, and that would have been interesting.
Oof.
But, you know, I mean, he's not the biggest guy at the weight class, although I don't think Paulo Thiago is really the biggest guy either, but I think he belongs there a little more.
Mm-hmm.
That's more of the correct weight class for him. So I think despite Diego's skills, I think he gets out-muscled here, and I think it's going to cost him the size deficit.
All right, so both of us on board with...
I think Paulo's going to win this one, Rambo style.
Yeah, special forces. Yeah.
Yes.
You care to dissent, Matt?
Nope. I agree wholeheartedly with both of you.
Perfect. Just the way we like it. Tito Ortiz, Matt Hamill. I haven't heard a lot of... I think they're kind of buddies, which is maybe why we haven't heard too much trash talk from Tito recently. Because he's kind of well known for trying to spice up fights a little bit with some trash talking.
Well, you know, Tito said when this fight was first booked, I'm not going to talk any trash this time because he's my friend. And we're all like, yeah, we'll see how long that lasts. And it's lasted.
Yeah.
So maybe it's true. You know, like Chuck and Tito were friends at one point. You know, Tito was always like, I would never fight one of my friends no matter how much money it was on the line. And Chuck was like, well, I mean, I'm his friend, but not that good of friends. But, you know, I mean, I guess they're pretty close. They're still willing to fight, but, you know, Tito doesn't want to ruin the relationship they have, I guess. So, I mean, I can see that. Tito's being nice in this one.
Yeah, I mean, but I really don't know what to make of this fight. I mean, I guess, you know, they're both wrestlers.
They've got similar styles.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I kind of like Hamill more on the feet, at least power-wise.
I'll agree with that. I think Tito actually probably has a more well-rounded stand-up. But, yeah, definitely the power I would lean towards Hamill because, you know, I don't think Tito's ever knocked out anyone standing up. Unless you want to count that slam on Evan Tanner. But that's, you know, that's a different deal. But Matt Hamill has shown that he can have some devastating strikes. I mean, he damn near killed that one guy. Mark Munoz,
who
is now apparently a badass, but at the time is like, oh, that guy just got his ass kicked by Matt Hamill. Who the hell is he? So, I mean, I would think that Hamill has the advantage standing up in terms of finishing the fight, but in terms of scoring points, Tito might have the advantage. He's got some kicks. They're not like fight-ending kicks, but
right. He's
got some. He's shown some Muay Thai in the past. And he's shown some jiu-jitsu in the past, too. I mean, he almost finished off Lyoto Machida, despite the fact that he completely lost that fight. That's something that people forget sometimes. Like, he was a couple seconds away from finishing him with a triangle choke in the third round.
Hmm.
I'm going to pick Tito on this fight.
All right.
He hasn't won a fight in a long time. He's like 0-3-1 in his last four fights. But, I mean, you look at the guys he's fought, and they're all world champions. A lot of them were world champions later on. I mean, Forrest Griffin was coming off being the champion and had a few tough losses and then edged out Tito in a decision. Lyoto Machida was his fight before then, and, you know, Lyoto Machida went on to be the champion shortly after that. And, you know, he had the draw against Rashad Evans. He lost to Chuck, but Chuck has always been a bad matchup for Tito.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, before that, he beat Forrest Griffin not too long before that.
Yeah.
So
don't forget his classic.
I don't care about those fights.
Victories over the always lethal Ken Shamrock.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you take those away, he's still got some. You know, I mean, like 2006 is a while ago now, but in terms of like looking at his record, he's only had a few fights. Like he's basically fought once a year.
Yeah.
Yeah, he hasn't had a win in 4 years, but, you know, he's fought top-level guys, and he hasn't gotten his ass kicked.
Mm-hmm.
He's lost, but he really hasn't been defeated. I mean, when I say defeated, I mean, like, just, you know, brutally defeated.
Yeah.
He lost to Lyoto Machida, but he also made that fight. You know, like, Machida was backing away and jabbing at him the whole time, and then eventually, you know, hurt him in the very final session of the fight, and, you know, then... When he finally got Machida to engage him, Tito almost finished the fight off.
Yeah. All right. Well, you know, I think I give the slight edge to Hamill here because of the power in his stand up, but I do think it's probably going to be a close fight. And by the way, it weirds me out every time I look at Matt Hamill's record because he has a win over John Jones. I'm like, what? When did that? Oh, right. It was the DQ where he was getting his ass handed to him, but he won because of a DQ.
Yeah. That was actually kind of a little funny thing I read on MMAtorch.com, actually, where Tito was saying, like, I've got a great opponent. He is, like, won his last four fights. It's like, well, yeah, he did.
Yeah.
But that's only if you're going to count the John Jones fight as a win, which is, you know, maybe a little bit deceiving.
But, yeah, so I always do a double take when I see that. But, yeah, I mean, Matt Hamill still, I mean... He's still a young fighter, you know. He's only 9-2. And, you know, losses coming to Rich Franklin, Michael Bisping. He should really be 8-3. What with the John Jones fight. But
you know, that Michael Bisping fight was real close.
Yeah.
Some say that he should have won that fight. So.
Yeah, that was pretty controversial, I believe, actually, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I just got this feeling about Matt Hamill in this fight. And I think it really is going to come down to the punching power. Again, you know, Tito's doesn't have... Tito's stand-up is nothing special, you know, and I think he you know, once he takes a hit or two, he kind of gets himself into trouble, obviously, but doesn't respond well when taking heavy shots, which, you know, in his defense, most people don't.
But, yeah, well, I mean, Tito's fought some powerful punchers before, yeah. And, I mean, Chuck Liddell put him away with punches 1.5 times. I mean, he knocked him out in the first time they fought. In the second fight, really, he just kind of had him in a bad position and punched his arm and, you know, maybe the side of his head until the ref jumped in. But, you know, you didn't really get the sense of, like, man, Chuck just knocked Tito the hell out that second fight.
Right.
So, I mean, Tito's fought some legit guys and has really only been knocked out once. So, I don't want to completely discount Matt Hamill's power, but... I don't see him getting a knockout.
Right. Okay. Matt, tiebreaker. Hamill, Ortiz. Who's it going to be?
I'm going to go with Hamill. I don't much care for Tito Ortiz.
All right. He's a punk. In the words of Ken Shamrock, he's a punk.
Oh, jeez. I don't want to really take the words of Ken Shamrock too seriously either.
You know, apparently Ken Shamrock actually just fought some guy the other day.
And he won.
Did he?
Yeah.
Oh, snap.
That's a big story. Hey, so we talked about it earlier, talking about potential, you know, future heavyweight matchups, Brent for Chet Congo or whoever, but Brendan Schaub's name got thrown out there. He's taking on Gabriel Gonzaga.
Step up.
Yeah, and for some reason I saw a couple, like, you know, the betting lines, and I thought I saw Schaub being he can't be a favorite in this fight. That doesn't seem right, does it? I mean,
well, you know.
I guess it's kind of that "what have you done for me lately" mentality, where it's like, yeah, sure, Gabriel Gonzaga is a veteran of the sport and has some solid wins in his career, but he's, you know, lost 2 of his last 3 fights.
Yeah, I mean, Gabriel Gonzaga is a good fighter, and he knocked out Krokop, ruined his career.
All his fault.
Well, yeah, I mean,
Krokop would be UFC champ if it hadn't been for Gabriel Gonzaga.
There's perhaps other factors that come into play, but, you know, like, Krokop's had all kinds of knee surgeries since then, and we saw the way he landed. So if nothing else, like, even if you take out just, like, the fact that he got knocked out and, you know, he lost and all that stuff, the mental things that go on, just the physical damage he took from falling down, from getting knocked out, could quite possibly be what led to his decline.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say it is definitively Gabriel Gonzaga that ruined Krokop's career, but for the sake of the podcast, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say it.
For the sake of inflammatory speak on a podcast, yes.
Yeah. So
sensational.
Oh, right.
Speak. Yeah. He took the number 2 or 3, depending on who you think was better at the time between Nogueira and Krokop, heavyweight in the world, and destroyed him.
Yes.
And he's really been riding that win for a long time since then.
It's his most notable victory.
Oh, absolutely.
In his career.
And he got a title shot after that, and other people have gotten title shots for beating him since then. Shane Carwin and Junior Dos Santos both set themselves up for a title shot because they beat him. So, you know, like, he's up there, but he's, you know, he's lost, and he really hasn't done anything impressive. He's got some wins, but they're all kind of like, you know, who are you kind of wins.
Right. I mean, he's got, his most recent fight was the loss to Junior Dos Santos. Before that, he had a win over Chris Tuchscherer, who, not a, you know, no offense, not a notable big-name heavyweight. The loss to Shane Carwin.
And even Chris guy, he kicked him in the dick, like, shortly before the fight was finished. And there was, like, no rest period or something. I remember there was a little bit of controversy over that. Like, maybe there was, like, a minute rest, but then they had to, like, fight right away. And then he finished it up. I don't remember because it was a while ago.
Yeah,
I
mean, that
was
UFC 102.
Yeah, that was, like, a year ago. But I remember there being some sort of genital foot controversy that related to Gonzaga winning. So, you know, take that with a grain of salt. But yeah. That might, yeah, he hasn't been too impressive as of late. Brendan Schaub, on the other hand, may have gotten his head punched off by Roy Nelson, but he won his fight that he's had since then. I think he's only had one fight since then.
Yeah, maybe.
And off the top of my head, I don't remember who it is. Let's look it up. Who was it? It was also Chris Urlacher, but he fought Chase Gromley since then also. So, you know, he's coming off a couple of TKO wins. But, you know, he's a guy that people are going to be familiar with from The Ultimate Fighter.
Yeah.
And as much as Gonzaga had that one big win, does Ultimate Fighter fame get you more than just, you know, one big win? He was a runner-up. He got some good knockouts. He's got some good power. I could see how he may be the favorite just based on fame and momentum.
Yeah, and I mean, the one thing I'd point out, I mean, I think the UFC definitely put this fight together with the idea that we're like, hey, Brendan Schaub can, you know, a good test for Brendan Schaub, and should he beat him, you know, he's kind of like on that next, in that next level in the heavyweight division, you know, kind of grooming him towards, you know, towards the top, who knows. But, you know, the thing I would say that really sticks out here is obviously the level of experience. And, you know, even though, you know, Gonzaga's got, you know, quite a few losses in his recent fights, they've all been against top-level opponents. Whereas, you know, Brendan Schaub's resume is much, much more thin. You know, his best opponent has been Roy Nelson. You know, he lost to him. But other than that, it's, you know, they both have the Chris Tuchscherer win on their record. But, you know, it's just not, he doesn't, and again, I think it's just a time and development thing. So, but yeah, no, I mean, he's shown he does have good power, and I don't think, you know, I guess Gonzaga does have the capability to knock people out, ask Crow Cop. But, you know, I do think Schaub has the advantage on the feet here, and, you know, I could see him taking this fight, but I think it's, you know, Gonzaga's definitely a guy who can give him a lot of trouble.
Yeah, well, this is kind of, I think, got a lot of the same hype that the Junior Dos Santos fight against Gonzaga had, where it's like, well, Gonzaga's more well-rounded, but, you know, Brendan Schaub may be better at that one thing. So
right. How
good can he fend off the takedown, and how good will his stand-up be when he's worried about that takedown? Because there's nothing that's going to leave you open for a punch like being ready to sprawl.
Right.
I mean, that's why Gonzaga was able to kick Krokop in the head. It was not because he was a better kickboxer, but because, you know, Krokop was so worried about the ground game that he was not ready for something like that.
Yeah, but I think it should be a good fight as long as we don't get a repeat of the Gonzaga-Kevin Jordan fight.
Well, that's probably not going to happen, and Gonzaga had a pretty legit excuse for that. Like, his daughter just died or something.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, that's terrible. I don't know.
Yeah. Way to make him feel bad.
I watched it on DVD afterwards, man. I just remember it was a really, really, really boring fight until 20 seconds before the fight ended. And then he was like, oh, Superman punch.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a real sad story to that, you jerk.
Sorry.
There are people escaping mines in Chile.
They're out already, actually.
Huh?
And it's a very rare exception.
All right, well, that was a good room killer. Sorry about that. Sorry. I just wanted to say something, anything.
Yeah. Hey, Matt, your boy is fighting. Tom Lawler.
Yeah!
Patrick Cote.
Oh, that's gonna be an ugly
Lawler.
Fight.
Lawler!
In a good way.
Yeah. I'm interested to see how Lawler comes out, what he'll be wearing, what kind of facial hair he'll be sporting, perhaps.
Yeah. Where's this fight taking place? California?
Your mama's house?
California.
It's not, actually.
That'd be cool if it was, though.
Good one. Yeah,
Tom Lawler at your mom's house.
UFC 121 live at Tobin's mom's house.
I would, in a new dress.
I would have to pay pay-per-view for that, at least. You know.
Have the best seat you're at in the house, you know.
Comfy couch, yeah. So, I mean, don't you talk about my mom. Blah, blah, blah. Outrage. How dare you, sir?
Yeah, that should be interesting.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was busy torpedoing Matt's joke about this. So you're in Tom Lawler's corner for this over Patrick Cote?
Absolutely.
Matt? Yeah. What if Tom Lawler came out dressed up as Patrick Cote?
Holy crap. That hadn't even occurred to me.
That'd be kind of hilarious.
That would be kind of hilarious, wouldn't it?
Yeah. But, I mean, Patrick Cote, I mean, he's kind of... obviously hasn't been the same since losing to the Bud Light logo in his Anderson Silva fight.
Well, you know, it's hard to say that. He's only had one fight since then, and that was against Alan Belcher, who has been on a tear.
Yeah.
Seems to be sidelined and maybe never fighting again. But, you know, for a while there, he was really building up a lot of momentum. And, you know, he fights a guy who's been on a year and a half layoff. And, yeah, I mean, what do you expect but a powerbomb to the face followed by a choke?
Yeah, so I think that's the important thing to know. You mentioned the layoff, and that was, you know, like, he had the... Cote had the loss to Anderson Silva back in October of 2008, and then, you know, just fought earlier this year for the first time.
That said...
But he likes... He punches hard. He likes to stand and
bang. He does like to stand and bang. I think Cote has had a really interesting UFC career because, you know, going into the Anderson Silva fight, he had rattled off something like four or five straight wins since being on the Ultimate Fighter Season 4. That said, Ultimate Fighter Season 4 was the comeback season, and his UFC record before that was like 0-3. He had a really terrible start in the UFC. He came in as a last-minute replacement for Guy Mesger to fight Tito Ortiz.
Yep.
And granted, that was a weight class up against a high-level opponent. But then he went down a weight class and lost a couple more fights.
Yeah.
I think got kicked out of the UFC after that.
Yeah, lost Joe Dirksen, Chris Lieben, and then was out after that. Came back for the Ultimate Fighter 4, where he lost to Travis Luter.
But then, yeah, he rattled off a huge win streak there.
Yeah.
Five wins? Six wins?
Yeah. Five. Like, let's see, five wins there before the Anderson Silva fight. You know, wins over Scott Smith, Jason Day, Kendall Grove, Drew McFedries, and Ricardo Almeida.
Yeah. I mean, some of those are pretty good wins.
Yeah. And I think he's favored. He should be favored in this fight. I think he's got a pretty good shot to win it, especially because Tom Lawler comes out really strong and then fades fast.
Yeah. He had that one fight, not his last fight where he fought Dirksen and lost, but the one before that, Aaron Simpson.
Mm-hmm.
He was winning that fight early on and ended up, you know, getting taken down a bunch, which, you know, he was supposed to be the superior wrestler in that, I thought. But he got out-grappled and ended up losing the decision, and that's kind of been... a theme for his last few fights is, you know, he wins early on but then loses. Cote seems to be able to at least, you know, have some good cardio. So, you know, it's hard to say what will happen that way. He might have a late finish, but, you know, Lawler seems to have a good chin. Aaron Simpson punches hard, and, you know, Lawler was able to withstand that. He actually got the better of Aaron Simpson standing up, which was not expected by most people. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I would lean towards Cote because it's a 3-round fight, not a 2-round fight. If it was a 2-rounder, I think I'd go with
Lawler. Yeah. Maybe he needs to start his own promotion.
Yeah, or he could just stay on the Ultimate Fighter and avoid Ryan Bader because that doesn't work out for him very well either.
Mm.
But, yeah, I think Cote will probably take this one. As much as I hate to say it, because I really do like Tom Lawler.
He's got
quite hilarious.
Yeah.
I was following him on Twitter for a while. I kind of stopped that because he's more entertaining in the ring than he is on Twitter. But, yeah, he's pretty entertaining in the
Nobody's
ring.
Nobody's perfect.
Yeah. I mean, anyone who's willing to come out to Who Let the Dogs Out by the Baha Men. And, yes, I did have to clarify what song I was talking about
there.
Because there's a lot of songs called Who Let the Dogs Out. But anyone who's willing to do that, I think he came out to Pink ones also.
Really?
That's my boy.
Good for him. So, Ultimate Fighter season, last season winner.
11.
Court McGee.
Against Ryan Jensen.
Yeah.
This is his first fight since winning, correct?
I believe so, yeah.
Now, Ryan Jensen, he was a WEC guy, right? Or am I thinking of somebody completely different?
The internet says he was not in the WEC.
Okay, I'm just talking out of my ass then.
Yeah,
huh?
IFC and UFC, primarily, it looks like.
Okay, I don't know what I'm talking about.
That's all right. At least you kind of had an idea. I mean, I had no idea who Ryan Jensen was.
Yeah.
Well,
so.
Apparently I don't either.
Well, hopefully McGee, you know, hopefully McGee doesn't win or lose and relapse, you know? That's all I'm hoping for.
Yeah, just stay off the horse, bro.
Once you have such a powerful personal story, it doesn't really matter what you do inside the ring. Just don't go back to drugs.
Yeah pretty much. If he wins, you know, he'll have the microphone. He's like, when I was vomiting from too much junk in the street, I never dreamed of this day. Or if he loses, you know, when I was vomiting in the street and the needle was hanging out of my arm, that was the lowest point. This is just another step in my recovery. So I think I'm saying do drugs, kids. You're like,
I'm not sure what your message is here, man. So are you picking Court McGee to win or lose?
Picking Court McGee.
Okay. I don't think you can bet on him not to relapse. Like, that's not in the fight line.
It's Vegas, man. You can bet on anything there.
But yeah, he's coming off the rear naked choke submission win over Chris McCray back in June.
Yeah, so.
The Ultimate Fighter 11 finale.
Yeah, I'm going to pick him. He's got a sweet beard, and Ryan Jensen does not.
This is true.
And he's got a sweet story. Ryan Jensen does not. And I don't think Ryan Jensen even has a nickname.
Let's see.
Not according
to Sure Dog's Fight Finder.
And according to Sure Dog's Fight Finder, Court McGee is the Crusher.
The Crusher.
Which is not the greatest nickname ever, but it's better than no nickname.
Yeah. But Jensen is coming off the win over Jesse Forbes back in May.
Yeah, you know, that's a decent win, but nothing too super impressive. But also one thing you got to factor in is the Ultimate Fighter winners aren't usually set up for failure right off the bat. I can't recall any Ultimate Fighter winner that lost his first fight after getting out of the house.
Yeah,
I guess other than Travis Luter, but he fought Anderson Silva, so that's a little different. But the UFC doesn't usually set them up to lose. They set them up against guys who are, you know, good, but aren't you know, necessarily the best style matchup to beat their guy.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Joe Silva may have made this fight with that in mind, that he wants Court McGee to maybe get a win or two under his belt before they get, you know, thrown in the deep waters.
Yep.
So I would expect Court McGee to win this fight.
Agreed. I think that about does it for all the big name fights and the main card. And are they doing the live prelims on Spike? Do you know?
I don't know, but I see some names in that undercard.
Yeah, Gilbert Ivel taking on John Madsen,
really?
Another tough alum there. But I mean, Gilbert Ivel, you know, he's exciting to watch. But
yeah, Greg's favorite. You
yeah,
know?
I'm gonna go with John Madsen by being the better wrestler and being not a bastard. So I think he should come out with a win. I'm surprised Ivel is still in the UFC. He went 0-2.
Right, but so I think it goes back to the exciting fight mentality. Like, even if he's losing, he's putting on exciting fights.
That's true. Yeah. He did go down really exciting against Junior Dos Santos.
He went down swinging.
That said, the Ben Rothwell fight left a bit to be desired, in my opinion. I mean, it was really exciting until they got tired.
Oof.
But
yeah,
they did get really tired in that fight.
Yeah, when those heavyweights fade, they fade fast and hard. So. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I kind of like Gilbert Ivel in this fight just because I think John Madsen only has the wrestling.
That's true, but I think Ivel only has the kickboxing.
Right.
So I think they're both pretty one-dimensional.
Style matchup for the ages there, yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, when it's one-dimensional fighters, I typically go with the wrestler over the striker just because, you know, the striker's got one or two shots before the wrestler gets him to the ground. So, you know, Ivel's got that knockout power,
yeah,
but he better use it quick kind of deal. And Madsen doesn't seem like the kind of guy who has any delusions about what kind of a fighter he is. He's training with Brock Lesnar, so he's got good training. You know, he's part of a great camp, and he's not going to try and stand and bang in this fight. You know, he's not going to be a fool. He's going to go in there and write out a decision, maybe pound him out, maybe lock on a sub, but even that is probably pretty unlikely. So I would think that he's going to be smart about it. And other than getting caught with something pretty quickly, much like Chet Congo and Cain Velasquez, if Ivel's able to seal that deal. But other than that, I don't think he has much of a chance. One thing to note is Madsen almost beat Schaub in The Ultimate Fighter. But Schaub was grabbing the fence a lot and managed to block a lot of takedowns that way until Madsen tired out.
Huh.
And then Brandon knocked him out. But he was getting taken down a significant amount and blocked a lot of takedowns from some illegal fence grabbing.
I totally spaced out on that. The heavyweight season was just in general, so...
It was pretty terrible.
I blacked a lot of it out. Okay, so you're going Madsen by decision, and I'm taking Ivel by knockout, sounds like. Matt, tiebreaker.
I'm going to go
wild
with...
Wild card, go!
Wild card! I'm an oil man! Oh, boy. I will take it by... A fan parachute fan.
Crowd interference. All right. Very good.
Fan parachute fan.
What were you trying to say? No, never mind. Why don't we bother? But yes, Spike TV will be airing two prelim fights at least. Court McGee, Ryan Jensen, and Patrick Kotake, Tom Lawler. Which is, it's too bad Lawler, it would help if he won, I guess. It's too bad Lawler's fights aren't on the main card, though, because you don't get to see his entrances.
Oh, sadness.
And he's had
that's the best part of his fight.
Yeah, that's really where it's at.
Yeah, but who knows?
Will they be airing the weigh-ins?
Yeah, those are usually on the pay-per-view like order or whatever for us.
Okay, because that's also usually pretty entertaining with Tom Lawler. Yeah. You know, come out with like some pink frilly stuff.
Yeah.
So that's cool.
Not quite up to Mayhem Miller's level, but
yeah.
So I will imagine, yeah, and time allowing, I imagine we might see the Ivel Madsen fight as well.
Yeah, there's one other notable fight on the undercard in Sam Stout versus Paul Taylor.
Yeah,
those are some guys that have had some main card exposure. Neither of them are upper level guys, obviously, but it's surprising to see them on the undercard, and I mean not even close to being on the main card or on the Spike card. They're just kind of at the bottom of the show.
Yeah, but Sam Stout, he had that pretty surprising win over Joe Lauzon, then the loss to Jeremy Stevens at UFC 113. But I think this is kind of this is probably going to be one of the fan favorite fights, I would imagine. Both these guys have a pretty exciting style.
Yeah.
Paul Taylor, he's probably upset he wasn't on the UFC 120 card, because I believe he's also British, right?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll say yes.
I'm pretty sure.
He's from England.
All right, cool. Good enough. Yes. Which is why I'm going to go with Sam Stout. Although I think he's Canadian, but that's closer to me, so I'll go with it.
I'll be contrarian, and I'll go for the red coat. My queen!
Well, I think we have the same queen. By we, I mean the Canadians. They have the same queen.
As the British?
Yeah, she's at least on their money. I'm not really sure how that deal works out. Can the Queen tell Canadians what to do?
I don't know.
I don't know.
I know what would happen if the Queen told me to do.
The John Candy comedy, Canadian Bacon, is an American classic, though.
Yes.
If we can agree on nothing else.
Although, if you can, get through the whole thing without falling asleep.
Whoa.
Pretty boring, if I remember.
What's with your hostility toward... You know he died, right? Show some respect.
Hey.
If only he could have died twice.
A lot of people have died, Tobin. What makes him so special?
No, he'll be missed, Planes, trains, and automobiles.
Ooh. Yeah, Uncle Buck.
Canadian bacon.
Canadian bacon.
Agreed. I like Paul Taylor in this fight, by the way.
Whoa!
Suck at Canada, or whatever.
Wherever you are. Right on. Anything else? Is that it?
No, I think that's it. I'm tired. I'm out of things to talk about. I gotta go rage against the political system.
Yeah.
Well, it's been a joy to have you here, then, here at the audio choke at MMATorch.com. Follow us on Twitter, audiochoke@twitter.com, also audiochoke@facebook.com. We love to start the conversation, have you be our friend, poke us, etc., etc. Like every week.
Hi, I'm Brett Rowland. I'm Tobin Shelby.
And I'm Matt Collins. See you next week.
Audio Choke.
Yeah, you're right.
Good one.